Very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. It's good to have you on board again for this Monday. It's the 1st of December. We do hope you are well. The lines remain open for you, as they always do, of course. 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. That's if you want to comment on anything we've been talking about, or you want to share your story, your experience, your positive experience, like we had from Lisa a little earlier on, whereby she's trying to track down a guardian angel in Alana. Right, a caller says, as a small business owner, it really annoys me when I hear farmers complaining and constantly looking for grants. If my business isn't working, my only option is to close the door. No one comes to my aid. Why is my business any different to a farmer's business? I don't know, really, but I'm thinking of, say, food security, for an example. I think it's important that we can produce our own food and have our own food. I suppose farmers and fishermen and what have you were sort of dragged into the EU, and that changed the playing field. If we were outside of the EU, perhaps maybe farming would be more sustainable, ironically, even though a lot of that money comes from the EU. That would just be my two guesses as to why. Farming as well, I suppose, there's a cultural importance to it as well. But maybe the caller's right. You know, I mean, businesses are under an awful lot of pressure, and every turnaround, I think today Your Future phone lines open for businesses as they sort of grapple with that extra cost to provide a pension for their employees. And then, you know, you've got extended entitlements, and you've got the minimum wage going up, and it's, you know, it's good if you're one of those workers. But if you're a business owner, you know, how much more can you take heading into what's probably going to be a tough couple of months? So I see it from all sides. 086 60 25000, if you've any further insight or can help me understand or formulate a little bit better. Is it possible that the disease, blue tongue, is in Northern Ireland and it was deliberate so as to give an excuse to bring in Brazilian beef? I don't think that would make sense, to be honest with you, but hey. Staying on that issue, foreign meat is taken into the country, stored in an Irish abattoir 3 or 4 days, then it's cut up, repackaged with Irish labels and sold as Irish meat. Charlie explained the quality situation very well. Another, farmers are happy to be pro-EU when it comes to receiving the farmers' payments every year. They call it the dole, but that's antagonistic. But listen, that's the word he used. The farmers' dole every year from the EU, in many cases to incentivise these farmers to reduce their farming activities because of climate change. Now they cry when Brazil steps up to the plate to fill the gap that Irish farmers have been incentivised by the EU to create. A caller says the DCC can't collect rubbish, but they'll sit on their backsides debating and pontificating on the Middle East plonkers. That's Dublin County Council, I presume, though DCC is also the same as Donegal. Here's some good news, by the way. Greg, I had a wonderful day on Saturday in Letterkenny shopping. I spent 6 hours shopping and eating, no issue with parking, and had a great day. And I've said that time and again on the programme. A lot of the complaints people have, it's not about getting into shops, it's about getting in and out of the blooming town. But when you're in there, it's well laid out, plenty of parking, etc. So thank you for that. On the defective block scheme, my husband registered to do the contract of our house. It's almost finished and we should have enough money to finish it. It just shows how much the contractors are getting, thousands upon thousands of euro. They need to stop, or this needs to stop. The government needs to step in and put an end to contractors charging whatever figure they want. If it wasn't for them, there'd be no problem with the scheme and people could get on with their homes and their lives. It's ridiculous. Greed is a terrible thing. So they've been able to take out the profits, I suppose. I mean, maybe the difference between what you're saving and the price of a contractor is their profits. I don't know. What do you think? Other people have a better insight into this, I'm sure, than I have. And an act of kindness to take us into the break. I was up at the breast check clinic this week. There is practically no parking. I got a tight space between cars and struggled to reverse out. Two lovely nurses, Mairead and someone who wasn't Irish, helped me out. Mairead got into the car and reversed it out for me. I just want to highlight some good. Okay, listen, we love good. Keep it coming. Now, we learnt at the weekend of the passing of former Donegal County Manager Michael
McLune. John McLaughlin is the Chief Executive Officer of Donegal County Council and joins me now. And good morning, John, and I'm sure me and you can join in expressing our sympathies to Michael's family and friends and former colleagues.
Yeah. Good morning, Greg. Yeah, and I suppose it's with some sadness I'm on here today, but I want to pay tribute to Michael McLune, absolutely. And first of all, condolences to his wife, Imelda, and three boys and one daughter. And again, to all our staff and councillors who knew Michael over many years. Certainly was a visionary in the council. I joined myself now. I was just telling Carrie, I started the council in 1999, but I'd really meet Michael McLune about 2001, where I became director of service 2 years later. And so I knew him then all the way up until since then. So that was a time of what was termed better local government, a lot of transformation in Donegal, indeed across the country. And Michael led that for Donegal and indeed a lot of effects in other counties.
Yeah, and part of that too would have been the establishment of public services centres. That was, yes, a big piece of work.
Yeah, that's what transformed, I suppose, as part of the better local government, bringing the government, the local government, to the people. So as you know, we built the public service centres throughout the county and all the what is termed areas then, electoral areas, now municipal districts. So a massive piece of work there, and a great credit to Michael McLune for doing that, and doing it at a time when money wasn't that plentiful either. So it took a lot of vision and I suppose determination to make that happen in those years, and a lot of people have benefited from that since.
And it was during his spell quite a time of transition. You talked about the establishment of those centres, etc., too. But also, you know, we saw the likes of the closure of the Fruit of the Looms Donegal factories, and I suppose maybe were we at a crossroads there in terms of where we were coming from and where we were going.
Well, I think, yeah, my history, when it looks back, they'll see that as a transition in Irish society and life, that the manufacturing jobs, where we were no longer, I suppose, quite competitive in that, and Fruit of the Loom in my own part of the world, Anishonia, where they were centred. A great employer for a number of years, and then they gradually closed down, and Michael McLune was asked to lead the government-led task force at that time, to see, well, what could be done, what was needed to transition Donegal, I suppose, to the modern economy. And I suppose a lot of credit due to them, what we see today in Donegal, particularly if you go to the business park in Letterkenny and so on, the type of jobs and the type of work we have now are on a par with anywhere in the world.
Yeah, because obviously, you know, at that time, I presume, you know, the council relies to a great extent, not exclusively, on income from businesses and successful businesses and businesses with good turnover. And that was a time whereby, you know, maybe those traditional sources were falling by the wayside, but the bills still have to be met. Investment still has to happen in the county, and you have to figure out, you know, how the county will prosper in a different direction.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Greg. There's a need to balance all forms of income, and you're absolutely right. The strong part is from their own local businesses and the commercial rates and what our own people do and bring to the county. And then that's matched, I suppose, with the drive to get other government funding and indeed sometimes loans, and to put it all together to get a package that lifts the whole county.
Of course, working closely from 2001 with Michael, you know, obviously he's a work colleague, but invariably I presume he became a friend too.
Yeah, no, I have great time for Michael McLune. It's I don't think anyone could meet somebody that's more committed and hardworking. But I remember, and I still remember, and I mentioned it often to people in my early days, the long meetings he had with staff as part of the reform process, and maybe start at 9 o'clock in the morning and run to 8 p.m. at night. And what stood out was he was just as interested in the last speaker on that day as the first, and really committed to it, and great energy. And we've seen that on other parts he did for the blood transfusion, HSE and so on, and massive working with councillors, and also with unions at a time of great change, to bring in those reforms and, I suppose, to get the buy-in and the consensus. But he was a kind-hearted man deep down, and he meant well for people, and he really, I think, enjoyed lifting the earning power of everyone in the county and the better outlook for people and their children and their families.
Yeah, obviously his passing is sad, and as you say, we extend our sympathies to his wife Imelda, sons Michael, David, Philip, and daughter Caroline, and the extended family and friends as well. And of course, whilst it is very sad to be talking of someone's passing, I think if I could go and leave a legacy of positive impact on my home county like he has, I would rest easy, I think.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. No, it's a massive, massive legacy, and most people will be saying that over the next few days. I'm after certain of that. I do remember the time, I can't remember the year now, we opened the Bundoran Ballyshannon bypass in his own backyard, and I recall too the challenge we had getting that through the consenting process, and deeply committed to that himself. And you know, it wasn't just, you know, for Ballyshannon by no means, but it's great to see him do that in his own backyard. Mm. And then we had a special lighting scheme put in that bridge. And him and his wife got to switch on the lights on it, which is a nice moment for him as well, you know, after, I suppose, working all around the country for many years. And then you're back in your own hometown switching on, which is a major, major achievement, the bridge over the Erne there. And it was nice for him to do that.
I didn't get to chat to him much. Did he have that Ballyshannon wit, or was he a more serious character?
Well, that's news to me. There is such a thing.
Are you joking, John? You've been in the show too long, my friend.
Well, yes. Yeah, yeah. No, he had a certainly wit to him, and a very, 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 very bright and quick and abled, but very considered as well. He would know when to use the wit and when it was appropriate, when to hold back.
Yeah. So no, we had a young girl from Ballyshannon in here last week that was very successful in the Garda Youth Awards. And if I didn't know where she was from, I would instantly have known where she was from,
very good.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, so I guess I had that then. Yeah,
maybe I'm closer to Ballyshannon maybe than you. Okay, yeah, right, again, thanks for, unless there's anything, John, you want to add?
No, just again, express our condolences to the family and all the wider circle as well, and his four children and grandchildren indeed, and it'll be sad for them, but there's a proud and an element to that as well when you realise what somebody's achieved over all those years.
Yeah,
and he was a good friend to us in the council, and always had the best intentions for the wider public.
I didn't realise he was such an accomplished Gaelic footballer either. Not surprising, obviously, he played for Éirua, but this is the bit I didn't know, that he was named on the Donegal team of the Millennium at wing forward. Wow. That's
I think it's all that comes out now. I think what happened, he got an injury early on in his 20s, and that probably brought an end to it. And then he was coaching and managing and so on then. But yeah, no, absolutely accomplished. And I had a great, when we talk about those days, you know, his eyes would light up. The achievements, you know, that are on the pitch. But no, absolutely, we express our condolences. And thank you, Greg, for inviting me on.
Thanks for accepting the invite. Look after yourself. Good. Thanks very much indeed. That's the current CEO of Donegal County Council, John McLaughlin, remembering his former colleague and friend, former county manager, as it referred to then. Of course, Michael McLoone, who you may or may not be aware was CEO of Beaumont Hospital in Dublin, and later also was appointed to the board of the HSC, that by the then Health Minister, Micheál Martin. So presumably that was around the time of the smoking ban and what have you as well, and also served on the board of the Blood Transfusion Service, and will be laid to rest in his native Ballyshannon on Wednesday. Now, we are joined on the programme now by Joe Sweeney, who's chair of the Donegal IFA. Joe, and it's just been kind of like a farming morning. We were speaking to people earlier on about the MerseyCorps deal, but also to all eyes on Blue Tongue and an outbreak. I don't know if it can be called an outbreak. Two cases certainly have been identified. Joe, how worrying is this for the farming community at this point?
Yeah, it's a difficult morning, Greg. From the weekend where the word came out that it was a possible two cases in County Down, it's probably like death. We know it will happen and it could happen and hoped it won't happen, but it has happened now, and there's two cases confirmed on the island of Ireland. It's going to have an effect unless it's controlled. Probably the thing that's probably in the favour of it is it's spread by a midge. It has been in England this last 18 months. It was sort of controlled, and we hoped against hope that we wouldn't see it here. And we thought we got away with it for the time being, because the most times it spreads is between April and November, because the temperature's above 12 degrees. I know the weather's been mild, but we thought at the stage now it was tailing off, that it might not happen, and next year's next year. But it's confirmed now, so the thing is now we have to try and get it controlled. It has to be controlled. Mm. There has been control measures in place, not allowing cattle from England to Ireland. or from the continent, for that matter of fact, because it's been there for a good few number of years. But it's happened now, so...
So do we know, is it just two questions, Joe? We'll have more questions, but two questions at the moment. Is it only transmissible via midge?
No. Well, yes, it is transmissible only by midge. It seems to be it's the biting midge that would bite the animals or live on the animals, and that's what...
So we're an advantage then, I presume, that we're sort of... you're probably praying for the cold now in December. That's an advantage. If this was May or June or July or August, and even with a 20-kilometre zone in place, you know, winds can carry these creatures and such. So it's worked to our advantage that if we were going to see it, we're seeing it now?
Yeah, well, hopefully. We're hoping that that's the case. Now, I know that there's an expert on livestock, but, like, we still don't know enough to say, like, that the midge could come and meal or straw or unfortunate other stuff. We can't. We just don't know. But it's predominantly the midge, and if it was to happen, it's probably as best time as it could. But there's never a good time.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation. I was going to ask you about where this was likely to have come from, but it makes perfect sense that potentially it could have come through in, you know, which has a warm environment internally, at least, you know, food or hay or whatever might have been transported in here.
And it was picked up in the factory by the vets. So, it might have been on the farm earlier, but no one picked it up, or it wasn't picked up until the two animals were actually slaughtered.
Okay.
So we just don't know the whole details there. But just for the farmers, it's a notifiable disease now, which it's all new to them. So if they see anything that resembles it, they'll have to notify their local vets or the DVO or whatever straight away. There's no point in burying that.
No, you can't do that. No. Yeah. One question, because it'll be picked up somewhere or other, and the damage could be done if you don't get it quick. One other question, sorry. When we talk about transmissibility, is it herd to herd by the biting midge? In other words, if one animal comes in contact with another animal, can it spread that way as well?
That I'm not sure. I take it it might
must be
because when they don't want no imports or of animals or the 20 kilometer, like the midge, 20 kilometers is not much good to the midge. So it has to be that. It has to be that it is transmissible once it's there.
All right. Okay, listen, thank you very much indeed for that, Joe. Appreciate your time. Joe Sweeney there, chair of the Donegal IFA. So blue tongue is transmitted, as we just heard, by biting midges that infect animals like sheep, cattle and goats when they feed on the blood. The virus is not spread directly from animal to animal, but can also be transmitted to unborn offspring in utero, you know, when they're pregnant, effectively. The midges are most active in warmer months. So it's transmissible through the biting, but also from cow to calf, so to speak. So that's it. Okay, so it should be manageable, hopefully, especially at this time of year. That's what you would hope, isn't it? Right, 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number. You can give us a call to 07491 25000. We appreciate every contact that we get in, trust me. All right, back with our next guest after these messages. I have in studio with me Rosa Glacken, who's Northwestern Regional President of St. Vincent de Paul. Rosa, thank you so much for joining me. How are
you
keeping?
I'm very well, thank you. And thanks for having me, Greg. And good morning to your listeners.
Yes, and thanks for joining us. And thanks for the work that you put in, Rosa, all year round. We speak to you a couple of times a year. And of course, as we approach Christmas, that's one of those times whereby St. Vincent de Paul starts to prepare for a very busy time. And is this going to be as busy as any years that have gone before it?
Absolutely, Greg. You might have seen our latest press release where in headquarters are saying they're quite worried about the rise in calls into us. Worried in the sense that there are so many more people who are struggling and there doesn't seem to be any light at the end of the tunnel for them. So, yes, it is going to be very, very busy and very concerning. Well, as you know, the cost of living is increasing all the time. Particularly, you hear people talking about their grocery weekly shopping is going up and up. Cost of fuel for their car and fuel for the home. And quite a lot of concern over people with arrears for their electricity. Mm. We're seeing a lot of that. You remember the last two budgets we had the help with the electricity. That was great while it was there, but unfortunately it didn't come this time round.
Yeah, so I struggle with that, to be honest with you, because, you know, for those people who didn't necessarily need them or who could get by, maybe the universal credits weren't that important, or they prefer them this year, but they'll survive. The people that are most likely to contact St. Vincent de Paul very much will be without this year. Mm-hmm. And that's why I just wish we had more targeted, consistent measures, because these are the same people that are being told constantly that we live in a one of the fastest growing economies in the world. Yet the number of people in arrears or in poverty is growing. And you're coming up to that expensive time of the year. Maybe you've just stumbled through getting the kids back to school. Mm-hmm. And to do that, you haven't paid your electricity bill or what have you. And listen, I'm going to be honest, I've been in this situation, and I was for really quite some time. And it's horrible. It really is horrible. You feel so isolated, alone and worried.
Very much.
Back in the day too, I remember signing post-dated checks on a Tuesday, praying that the local shop didn't bank till Thursday.
Yeah.
But what happened then when the post-dated check came out on Friday, that was me banjax for another week. Mm-hmm. And on it goes. And very quickly you find yourself falling into debt.
Yes.
And I think that's kind of a typical situation. These aren't people living excessive lives, Rosa. They're just trying to live.
Oh, that's very true. And that really sums up the way I would see it as well. And you often hear me speaking about people who are working, doing their level best, as you say, paying the bills, getting by. There just is nothing left over for any emergency. And the emergency then could be the washing machine, the car, throws them completely. And then sometimes these people feel they shouldn't come to us. And we're very, very much pleading with them. If you're working, that doesn't matter to us. It's how you're fixed and how you're coping. And the stress that it causes is not good for people's mental health as well. So I'd be very concerned for people in that situation, and we would plead with them, please contact us, we can help. But do it sooner rather than later, because we're now preparing, we're getting the calls in, the lists are being prepared, and you know, we're getting ready to go out in early December. So do get in touch if you're in that situation or you feel you won't be able to manage. Mm. And everybody wants to do the best they can for their family at this time of the year. But there are also people who may be living alone, and they are also struggling. Just as you say, rents are going up and all the rest.
Yeah. And I mean, like, unfortunately, and I hope it's still not the case, but I know, like, it's cold at the moment. Like, it's 4 or 5 degrees and it feels colder. And, like, I know there's probably older people listening, waiting hard potentially on the Christmas bonus this weekend, who are probably sitting in the house with a coat on and gloves on, and they're thinking, I'm going to put the heating on at 6 this evening so it's warm going to bed.
Yes.
That's the lived reality. Yet again, I'm sorry, we're constantly being told that there's no rainy day and that this country is incredibly prosperous. It's important to recognise too, Rosa, is it, that there is zero shame in seeking help. A lot of the people, I'm sure, that might contact St. Vincent de Paul have donated in the past or may donate into the future. Mm-hmm. This is helping people in this moment in time.
Absolutely. And we do see that people who were donors, oh, I can't go to St. Vincent de Paul now, I was a donor. Please come to us. We plead with people. Absolutely come to us. And as you say, people are struggling with the weather. It has been extremely cold. Mm. I definitely agree with you. And nobody should be cold in this, as you say, booming economy, but there are people out there struggling and worrying about their heat and their bills and so on. Mm. And we can help, we can make a difference, and we're very glad to do that. Yeah. But they must contact us.
And in older homes too, I have a room where I know the temperature inside the room, right? If the heating's not on, like if it's 7 degrees outside, that room's 4 or 5 degrees. Mm-hmm. It's quite strange. Now, obviously, in modern houses, blah, 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 but a lot of the people we're talking about aren't. They're in old brick houses, and it's mm-hmm. astonishing sometimes that the internal temperature can be colder than the external temperature. So I want to remind people again that it's okay to get a little bit of help. But how do? What about people that want to continue to support St. Vincent de Paul, right? Because sometimes people might have some extra money or might want to do something nice for someone for Christmas. So people too can donate to St. Vincent de Paul and pay it forward that way, I presume.
Yeah, absolutely. And as always, people are extremely generous. Businesses, schools, individuals are very, very generous at Christmas. And we have our annual appeal next weekend, our church gate collection. And as well as that, people should remember we have our shops who are very, very helpful to us. We're highly dependent on them indeed. So anybody bringing in goods to our shops, that's supporting us in a very, very real way also. So we're very, very grateful to everybody who supports us. They are generous.
How do people get in contact with St. Vincent de Paul?
If they know the number for their local conference, there would be conferences looking after each area around the county. If they know that number, get in touch that way. If they wish, they can go online and click on the Northwest and send in a request, and that'll be bounced back to whichever area it applies to, and it's dealt with as quickly as possible. And just to remind people, it's confidential. We do meet with them confidentially, and we're very sympathetic, non-judgmental, and the sooner they get in touch, the better.
And you touched on this a little earlier on, and it's something that should really be factored in this conversation. It's the pressure money worries puts on families, be it a single parent wondering how they can make Christmas Christmas, right, to the pressure it can put on a relationship. Mm-hmm. I don't think this very much puts pressure on a relationship more than money worries. Now, we have our fair share of challenges that can test us at mm-hmm. times in this county between mm-hmm. DCB, etc. But, you know, the mental impact on people mm-hmm. struggling is mm-hmm. Underreported, I think, Rosa.
Very much so. And I personally have seen an increase in people whose mental health has been challenged, not only by the stress of money worries and so on, but day-to-day living and so on. And there isn't great support. The services do their level best, but they are very stretched. And some of the living conditions of those people, you know, where they can't afford rent for better accommodation, as you know, rent is rising all the time. Some of the places they're living in would not help their mental health.
And some people with pay-as-you-go meters, it's probably been whistling mm-hmm. all weekend mm-hmm. and clicked off this morning too. And you have to try indeed. And find the money for that. It's so tight.
We do give vouchers, by the way, towards electricity to help with electricity bills. And that has been a great innovation. So, you know, they can use those vouchers to take money off their bill. But sometimes it's beginning to get out of hand altogether, which is very, very stressful. So we are very sympathetic in that situation.
Well, you could find yourself an 800-900 euro of electricity arrears very, very,
very quickly.
There's just no doubt about that. And then you have to start servicing that debt. As I just wish, and this is more hopeful than a reality, I just wish we had a setup, and this is not criticism of any political party, I'm not interested in that. If we had a setup whereby the wealth of this country could help to address this, I mean, this is going to be St. Vincent de Paul's busiest year ever, potentially, mm-hmm. in a country, again, that claims to be one of the fastest and wealthiest economies. We really need to connect some of that wealth to the people that need it. How we do it, Rosa, I don't know. It's above my pay scale, but it's a very difficult society to be part mm-hmm. of when you see that happening.
Well, we do have a group in our headquarters who lobby government on a regular basis. And for instance, we were successful, for instance, in getting free school books, which we'd lobbied for years. The families on low income were finally given the fuel allowance. But as you say, a lot more needs to be done. And we're constantly looking at, you know, what is required to get people up out of that poverty level. And budget after budget, we plead with them, you know, more is needed. We do our best.
But the problem is, budget after budget, you look at the mm-hmm. independent analysis of it, mm-hmm. and it's the higher income earners that mm-hmm. seem to benefit every time.
Yes.
The working poor mm-hmm. don't, very rarely, mm-hmm. and the poor don't. Mm-hmm. A caller says, I have a friend who is so close to the breadline that she won't put on the heat simply because she can't afford it. The house is freezing. Mm. That person needs to reach out to St. Vincent de Paul.
Absolutely, immediately, and we will help as quickly as possible. Mm. Nobody should be as cold as that. That's dreadful.
Mm-hmm. I know people are working and simply don't want to spend money and hence live in unnecessarily freezing conditions. That's, I mean, listen, I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but that's the exception, not the rule. We're mm-hmm. talking here about people that, unless you've been in it, that situation where you are skint, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, you have 20 euro. Do you buy bread, milk and butter? Or do you buy nappies mm-hmm. or feminine hygiene products? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's a lot of people literally making that decision. Do you put that 10 euro in your car mm-hmm. or do you get a plastic tank and mm-hmm. put 10 euro of home heating oil and then tip it into your oil tank? There's a lot of people that are living like that.
Absolutely.
Not people who are tight in inverted commas mm-hmm. and are banking the money rather than putting the heat on. Yeah. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, right? I know a few of those people too, right? But that's not who we're talking about today.
No.
The key message is, if you can benefit from St. Vincent de Paul, if you are those people that we're talking of, St. Vincent de Paul is there for you. It's non-judgmental. Don't feel bad. You know, maybe you've donated in the past, maybe you can into the future. But we are trying to deal with essential groceries price increases of 55 cents per litre. 80 euro on home heating oil. The price of petrol and diesel, we've become accustomed to it now mm-hmm. being 180 in some petrol stations, just constantly 180. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, we were crapping ourselves, pardon the language, a couple of years ago because it was pushing towards 2. Now we just accept it. And mm-hmm. it. Anyway, okay. And look after yourself too, because the stress of this, Rosa, people need to sort of get a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, and you can provide that.
Absolutely. Do reach out to us and we will do our level best. We do respond to everybody who makes contact.
And and dig deep. Deep for the annual fundraiser next week, because that money goes that directly to helping people.
Yes, indeed.
Do you take cards at Mass now?
Pardon me?
Can you tap it at
at some areas, it's very hard.
To be on the safe side, okay? Yeah. So bring an extra little bit of cash, some for the plate and some for St. Vincent de Paul then.
That's it.
And get into your local St. Vincent de Paul shop. It's a fantastic it's a fantastic means of raising money, and buy your stuff there or donate good stuff as well. Mm-hmm. So in other words, there's loads of ways you can help, even if you don't necessarily have an excessive cash yourself.
For sure, yes.
Anything else you want to add, Rosa, or if we touched on most of it there?
I think we've covered most everything, and just again to get that message out, contact us sooner rather than later, and don't be ashamed to do so. We're delighted when people contact us.
And I know that because you are the same as your colleagues and you're only in the business of helping people.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, listen, thanks very much, Rosa. Keep up the great work you and the teams do. A lot of it's unheralded, but the people who benefit know what you do. And keep on giving if you can as well. Rosa Glacken, Northwest Regional President of St. Vincent de Paul, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
Right, now, reading recently that the GAA will not be giving consideration to paying inter-county managers in the short term. The Amateur Status Review Committee has completed its report and will present its findings to the Central Council. The committee, chaired by Professor David Hassan, has stopped short of recommendations that inter-county team managers should be in receipt of remuneration, and consequently there'll be no such motion to Congress in 2026. Brendan Devaney's the presenter of the DL debate and hopefully has a view on it, or it'll be a short interview. Brendan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. it's a toughie, this, isn't it? I mean, like, can you break it down for me? Inter-county managers are rewarded for their efforts, right? Are we not, would we not be bringing what might be not under the table, because that sounds like there's something dodgy going on, but having an adult conversation, you know,
yeah,
a reality conversation?
Yeah, obviously the GAA do recognise that the payments are going on. They know they are, because it'd be foolish not to do it. Now, obviously, this goes right under club management as well. So again, at its heart, this amateur organisation is trying to keep hold of its values, because you've got the haves and have-nots. So to kind of reconcile with that is very difficult for the broad membership to agree to it. I mean, there was a recent review where they considered, I mean, Gareth Burns himself put forward a possible 20k payment for managers, but there were so many divisions and people not agreeing with that. And what do you do? And I mean, Jack O'Connor, the Kerry manager, has come out saying that you can't be paying managers, you know, players in and be looking for money. And you have all this kind of roll on effect. Where does it stop? Where does it end? But it's a really, I don't know how, like, you can come to a conclusion on, because there are always going to be counties where football is loved more than other, and businessmen and different people are willing to put in money. And if you're near a top manager and people want you enough, they're going to pay for it. And the fact that people think that it's just expenses now is, I think the GAA has obviously shown that that isn't the case. But to think that, you know, these managers are full time, you know, that's what they are. That's their job, basically. So they need to be compensated for that.
Like, I'm not saying anything dodgy is going on, but I think this is going to take one big revenue case to blow this wide open.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a lot of question marks out there about where exactly the money comes from and how is it channeled through. Because as it stands yet from, say, your county board level, there is expenses paid, and that's as far as that goes. So any other money comes from other places. And listen, everybody knows it's going on, but I suppose, like, the people that are putting in the money are happy enough to do it, and the managers are getting paid, and that's the world we're in at the minute. Because of the nature of it, it has left a kind of wee bit, as you said, it is an under-the-table payment that's going on, so it's very hard to quantify what that is now, and I suppose that leaves a lot of question marks for people in terms of how much has been paid, where's it coming from, and then, of course, as you said, if revenue get involved, that's another story.
Yeah, and I'm sure everyone keeps the books in order. Don't get me wrong, but I wouldn't even know. I mean, if you're getting a salary, but it's not a salary, I don't know. It sounds complicated. And this €20,000 that was floated, sure, that wouldn't butter the parsnips either. I presume for the big guys, it's much more than that.
Yeah, listen, you often hear about figures out there, and I've heard of a few fairly credible ones, and it's big money. Like, you know, you hear it a lot out there, particularly with the top managers. And because when a few of them have even crossed over in the club, you've heard in from people that you would know are in the clubs that what it's been paid, and it is well above what your normal salary would be. But I suppose, like, because you see it comes from a fund. So if you have big business out there, it's probably not a lot to them.
See, the way I kind of view it, though, Brendan, is, you know, and people often don't like it, but it might be more palatable in the GEA. Say, for instance, the big charities. You know, they've all got people that, well, not all of them, but the majority of them have people that are on massive money, you know, 250k a year or what have you. And these are charities where lots of people do work for free and all that kind of stuff. I mean, so I'm not saying it's the same, but there is a bit of a precedent there where you can have some people within an organisation paid for their full-time commitment, which it would be, and then still sort of retain an amateur sort of player pool. Or do you think that if there were official payments to managers, then it would be inevitable then that we start talking about the payment of players?
I don't think players really line up with stuff like that, Greg. I think for a player, still as it is now that might change over time. It's such an allure. It's such a great thing. They play for your club. And then if you're on about county, for example, they represent your county. And it does have effects in other ways. If you for a lot of people around employment and maybe the type of business they get into or the work that they do, it does have benefits. And there is, you know, the lads, our own lads, were recently in Mexico on stuff which would be maybe a once-in-a-lifetime holiday for a lot of people, but they'll get that a lot of years. So there is benefits in there. I think when it comes to the likes of charities and that, if you have administrative staff, the same as the GAA, they obviously need paid. And if you have someone who's a very good, say, CEO of a charity, then their worth is in the worth of the money they're bringing into charity. Otherwise, they wouldn't be paid. And I know for some people thinking, well, it's a charity, blah, blah, blah. But if you want good people that's going to actually generate more money for the charity, you need that. I think in this term, because we don't know what's been paid and because different counties are willing to pay a lot more than others because there's money in them, it probably has the GAA in a very awkward position around a lot of things because, again, Greg, you're back to the haves and have-nots.
Yeah, but the problem is, even if it doesn't happen, but it does, your ability to gather money together to fund a manager and his team and even the training regime or whatever, and maybe some of that is fine and goes through official expenses and all, like you do start creating a two-tier. Who's best at gathering up money? Who's best at distributing that money versus, you know, how does a Leitrim compete with that and try and draw a manager to get them out of wherever they're at?
Yeah. So you have a few factors, you see, Greg, and that's why this is such a deep subject, because you have the population of the county, you have, are they a football, are they a hurling, what else is going on in the county? Like in Donegal, you know, we have a lot of soccer, people in the rally with many, many different things. So you've got, say, a certain degree of people that are into the GAA, let's say, and then you've got the will that's behind that in terms of population and the amount of business people that are going to get involved. So because, and that goes up and down. If you look at it, it's probably when Jim comes on now, there's a big will comes on behind that in terms of everybody wants involved. Maybe not so much the year before when he was there. So It's very up and down, Greg. It's kind of hard to put a finger on. The money isn't always there from all the people, so it's such a mixed bag. That's why it's a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah, and the right manager
the problem is that the one of the best things about the GAA is that the organization, it's made up of the people, and you always try and bring up everybody you can. Now, of course, some counties have less population and this and that, which is, again, nobody's fault, but you need to promote it as much as you can. Okay. So if the top counties now are able to pay the top managers more to come in, it's another thing that's going, as you said,
create that. But you go down to club level then this weekend. We had a club from a village of 38-odd houses progressing in the Ulster Championship. That's what happens when the playing field's somewhat levelled. All right, Brendan, Newbridge. Thanks. Yeah, Newbridge, good man. Thank you for that. I knew they made crystal. I just wasn't sure whether it was... Listen, good luck. Take care of yourself. Brendan Devaney there.